We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
We have to begin with the end in mind, which is, what is our purpose? And have we articulated it clearly enough, both inside the company, you know, to kind of create that cause that employees will rally for and that people want to be a part of, but also to express externally sort of a vision for what the company is trying to achieve.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. For today's episode, I'm handing the microphone over to my colleague and my friend, Jen Overstreet. Take it away, Jen.
As we see social responsibility and sustainability rising to the top of mind for consumers, people are looking for a meaningful connection to the brands they support. Today, we're speaking with PwC U.S. Consumer Markets Advisory Leader Ron Kinghorn about environmental, social, and governance, or ESG investing, how ESG can be used as a core competitive differentiator. My co-host for today's episode is Sarah Rand. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, Jen. Good to see you.
You too. And welcome, Ron, to Retail Gets Real.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
So the first thing we have to ask is the million-dollar question. What is ESG? This is an acronym that some people may not be aware of, and it could mean different things to different people. So help us out.
Sure thing. It is absolutely alphabet soup out there when it comes to these topics. But I think the concepts of ESG, as you've outlined, environmental, social, or society and governance, they've been around in the mix for well over a century. You know, it goes all the way back to the big picture question around shareholder primacy or stakeholder primacy. So as in, whose interest do we put first? Bottom line profit, total shareholder return, the types of things that one might think about and read in the headlines every day, or a broader range of stakeholders that are impacted by retailers, your customers, your employees. Yes, clearly your investors, your supply chain, your suppliers, right? You think about a broad range of possible stakeholders. And how do we balance their interests in something that's good for business, but ultimately in the end, good for society and good for growth of an overall healthy economy?
It's really that stakeholders versus shareholders perspective that you're talking about. And I wonder how that has changed more recently. I mean, this is something that people have been talking about for decades, but it seems like, especially in the last year, business leaders out there have come out to say, we are a stakeholder first company. Are you seeing that particularly in retail, and why now?
I think you're right. The last couple of years in particular, we've sensed this. I actually had two really interesting experiences related to NRF. One was at the big show, the last one in person, and sort of just the sense of these topics and how they were emerging on the agenda, and or what was going on the floor in terms of sidebar conversations on a range of topics. And clearly this was pre-COVID and anything else we've experienced since. I think the second was actually my last business trip before COVID was actually visiting Matt Shea in Washington, D.C. to check in early March when there were this faint winds of something blowing called COVID, and what would it mean for retail, and what would we do around sustaining the industry through what could be an interesting time. A couple of years ago now, the Business Roundtable, a group of leaders associated with the Business Roundtable, signed on for this concept of stakeholders as a priority, which was a big shift from previous positions they had taken where, you know, stakeholders were essentially derivative to shareholders. And the most recent pronouncement became much more essential. So the stakeholders message started there. At the same time, you had big institutional investors like BlackRock and their leader, Larry Fink, taking very public positions around things like purpose and climate. And then the World Economic Forum started a range of thoughtful efforts to lay down a sense of, well, what do we mean by this? And what can you do about this? And what would good or great look like? So I think we've seen a lot of things in the ecosystem that have started to send signals through every industry. And then I think when you talk about retail and you think about these concepts, and you think about just something as simple as human-centered design, and we always begin with our consumer and our customer, these topics matter deeply to to our consumers. We're also navigating change like the shifting demographics as we see Gen Z and the millennials start to establish themselves and to have a bigger wallet and to very clearly express a preference for companies and brands that do value the planet and do put their people first and that are thoughtful around how they govern themselves or what they do to manage the things like cyber and privacy when it comes to individuals' mobile first existence and the privacy that comes with that. So, you know, those are a few of the things that we've been experiencing that we think has created this sense of increasing urgency. It's definitely raised it up on the radar in terms of boardrooms, C-suites, and line management as you're in your function and you're thinking about what do we do at the store ops level? What are we doing in the supply chain? What do we do around merchandising? How do we run our company? How do we take care of our people? What do we do into this moment that is COVID? So a lot of other companies could kind of retreat to home base, literally. And many didn't experience much of a disruption and many actually found newfound efficiencies. I think the fact that retail needed to and did stay on the front line and companies took the health and safety of their employees very seriously, tried to recognize and reward the workforce for doing that work, that important work, that was just probably landed even more sort of personally on the purpose of the retailers that I get to interact with, you know, which is always very much grounded in their associates and in their employees. And I think this has been a great test of that purpose and expression around topics like ESG.
You know, you mentioned millennials and Gen Z, and I wonder about this approach that you're talking about in Gen Z and the transparency that is so expected now of consumers. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what is the impact of this on consumers when you take an approach like this and when you really focus in on sustainability issues and issues like what you're talking about?
From all of our research and or the other research that's available, it's very clear that Gen Z and the millennials value sustainability, climate consciousness, thoughtful responses to social unrest. From, you know, more than 50% of that cohort will be influenced by companies' behaviors with respect to these topics. So I think when you start to see both the sense of the rising or the expanding wallet that these age ranges possess and are building into, and just sort of the way they have oriented to the world, the way that they view the importance of aligning a company's purpose, whether the companies that they work at and or the brands that they buy from, I think in both cases, it's sort of a trust equation. We're seeing over and over again, regardless of which element of these topics you look at, the majority of that population will tip their cap towards the brands that demonstrate and value these topics and that deliver them consistently. And so I think that when you just take in this moment and you take in those cohorts, it's an important tipping point. Still not the majority, but very quickly rising in terms of the disposable dollars and the ways they choose to spend them and where they choose to spend them, very much impacted by these topics.
Retailers are really responding to what consumers are demanding of them. They're listening to their customers who are being more vocal than ever about the issues that they care about most. And there are a lot of issues out there. There's really big ones like the environment, and there's lots and lots of smaller ones. This year, particularly, social justice has been a big issue. How does a retailer that is listening to all of their customers pick what they should be leaning into?
I think where retailers need to begin is with their purpose. I think we have seen companies that have long been recognized for being aligned with certain elements of E, primarily as early environmental players and or players in the re-commerce space, that are attractive to certain consumers. I think that in some cases, retail often gets the rap for being, you know, very bottom line focused and maybe not as aligned with some of these more societal measures and or, you know, sort of external stakeholders. So I think we have to begin with the end in mind, which is what is our purpose? And have we articulated it clearly enough, both inside the company, but to kind of create that cause that employees will rally for and that people want to be a part of, but also to express externally a vision for what the company is trying to achieve beyond some of the obvious objectives of a high quality retailer, like right product, right place, right time, right price. I think it begins with that. And then I think as you start to explore these topics in ESG, things like ethical sourcing, things like, you know, when we dig into climate more broadly, what is our position on climate change? We see a lot of activity right now from companies, large and small, around net zero and taking a position and planting a flag as to what will our position be in this space. So I think getting really clear and coherent there and thinking about how one might express that in the marketplace, it sounds like a back to basics kind of exercise, but I think as we've talked about here, there's just such a range of topics. We really haven't gotten into all of the social elements when we think about what's gone on in our society, you know, over the last year and some of the social unrest that we're working through and some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion opportunities that exist for companies, but also for brands as they try to express authentically, very important authentically, and not just in the moment raising your hand, but really think through what is our purpose? What is our position? Are we walking the walk? And can we express that through our associates and through our brands and through our supply chain and just broadly around who we're trying to be as a part of some very important moments that society is facing broadly? So a couple of topics there beyond sort of some of the more corporate elements of what does your board look like and how diverse is that board and are you getting diversity of, and some of the things that are happening there at the more classic board composition and board oversight level that I think also send a really important message. Are we walking the walk? Are we evolving both the associate on the ground to the board member that's leaning in? And how does that all come together to kind of holistically, coherently express our brand and sort of the trust equation that we want to have with our broader consumer base?
I'm hearing you say that authenticity is so important and people are so skeptical now. I'm just wondering, how do you do this in an authentic way, especially as you're talking about the social issues? How do you do this in a way that doesn't appear that you're just doing it for the now because everyone else is? Where do you even start if you're an organization that doesn't have a history of transparency or an organization that isn't necessarily considered a socially responsible company? You know, it's not like the first brand attribute that comes to mind. Where do you start?
One of the places I'd suggest we start is just recognizing, you know, from some of our research that we've been driving in the marketplace, you know, 77% of consumers, you know, expressed the fact that it's deeply important to them how companies respond to racial injustice. It's a stated fact, it's an expression. And so when you start to think about, you know, what are the first steps? Like one is acknowledging that this is a conversation that your customers and consumers want to have with you. And that back to this concept of authenticity, like it's one that you need to publicly address, but appropriately address, meaning one that's aligned truly with things that you are actually making happen. And so less about painting a picture for the world we all hope to be, but you know, much more importantly, you know, what are the things that are happening inside the company or around the brand or in the community, the communities that you support that are the true first, second, and third steps forward on these very important topics. It comes back to an authentic response and one that, you know, on the business end of this, that one has to acknowledge that consumers are clearly signaling they want to hear your voice. So I guess it goes back to basics and it goes back to doing what you said you were going to do and expressing that again with authentic, clear-minded, purpose-led voice. Has to come from the top and it needs to cascade through the entire organization.
Actually, that goes in two directions, right? So it's one thing for the leadership to say, here's our stance on this issue and we are taking a stance, an active stance. But you have to empower your employees to take that stance and you have to go backwards into the supply chain and make sure that what you are, you know, the merchandise you're carrying, the tools that you're using, the way that you transport those products are all in alignment with that value statement. And I imagine that that's hard, right? And I wonder if you either have some examples or some advice for retailers who are saying, yeah, I want to be a purpose-driven brand, but I've got thousands of employees and thousands of others in the manufacturing process. Where do I start?
Yep. It goes back to the concepts that are evolving around stakeholder primacy and or, you know, reaching to our stakeholders. So like you described, there are many moving parts and many human beings from the end to end on this. So I think that, you know, what we're seeing retailers do, one, really engaging in a thoughtful way into the supply chain. And I think this is also from the CPG side as well, right? Like taking stock of the supply chain, better visibility into the supply chain, you know, not just the classic transparency topics of where is it coming from and is it aligned with our values, but what's the state of play for those individual companies that make up our broader ecosystem? Could we possibly be a part of the solution for them, or might they need a hand up as well? Or might they need some relief sort of into the supply chain, if you will, in terms of just the bar that we're holding for them in terms of performance, and or do we need to possibly give them a break on some of the short-term payment terms that are going on? I'm not talking about at scale and forever, but we have seen you know, many more CPGers, retailers, manufacturers kind of collaborating together to think about, you know, how do we tackle this together in a more connected way? Understanding that only as strong as your weakest link, as they say, you know, really has come to the forefront here as we've dealt with the pandemic, as we've dealt with all the new challenges, you know, sort of this idea of the great acceleration, right? Every trend that we were all wrestling with has hit us like 10x in the last 9 months or so. And I think that some of the mega trends or macros that we were all dealing with have become even more clear and challenging, right? So I think when you go back to the business roundtable, you think about the World Economic Forum, you look at industry associations like the National Retail Federation and what goes on to bring industries together and to do good things, like what happens with the foundation and how do we help invest in the future of the industry? How do we help better understand each other and kind of connect across the value chain to navigate what's right in front of us, but hopefully evolve into something that's maybe more enlightened and more resilient in the future when we face whatever's next as an industry.
Ron, that is a great place to end our conversation, because unfortunately we are out of time. But it's been fun talking to you about all these big issues, kind of zooming out a little bit about talking about what matters. And it's a great time to talk about it. It's always a great time, but especially the beginning of a new year after the year that we've had. So thank you so much for joining us. But before we go, we do have one more segment, and it is called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So for Rapid Fire, we are going to ask you a series of questions, and we would like you to answer with just brief, sentence-long answers with the first thing that comes to mind. So don't think too hard about it, okay? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Sarah, first question.
Okay, I see a stack of books behind you on the shelf. What book would you recommend a listener read?
Oh, boy. I think 10 Years to Midnight, and that's sort of self-serving perhaps, but that was written by our chief strategy officer, Blair Shepherd. And it talks about a lot of the trends that are landing today, over the next 10 years, that we need to address in society. And I think they're very applicable both on an individual and at the corporate retail level.
What was your very first job?
my prior half life was playing ice hockey. So I played after college in the minor leagues and made a living of getting hockey pucks shot at me. So that was, it completely prepared me for consulting, I must admit.
Last movie you watched?
Oh, you know what? We watched Hamilton on Disney Plus. I'll call that a movie, although we did get to see the production in person. And I did definitely act my age. I had a new iPhone and we were sitting in New York. The lights went down and somehow I went to shut the phone off and I let off the alarm, the 911 call. So my poor teenage daughter was completely mortified, and I made my mark at Hamilton, but we love the production, and we love it was just as well done, I think, in different ways on Disney Plus. So it's a fan fave.
All right. What is your favorite vacation spot?
Probably my personal favorite is the White Mountains of New Hampshire. There's just an amazing, it's an amazing collection of mountains that are all very hikeable. The Presidentials, as they're called, and there's a whole series of Appalachian, the Appalachian Mountain Trail ends there, and there's a series of huts that exist, you know, that you can reserve a bed at the hut, make your way through part of the Appalachian Trail. So I think that's probably my favorite place to be with family and friends in the White Mountains.
Ron, thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. We've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Real pleasure. Here's to 2021.
And Sarah, thank you for joining as well.
Always my pleasure.
For more information about the National Retail Federation, please visit us at nrf.com. And thank you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. Please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. And thank you for listening.